Blog Talk Radio. Your host, Merle Exit, here in New York City. Yes, today I'm going to do an entire show. I know I cut people off. I didn't cut anybody off. I just wanted to see what was going on there at B.B. King's. But now I'm doing it in my own territory. Let's see. What did Della wear? That's what we want to know. Probably some great outdoor clothing. As we're going to travel to the state of Delaware to talk about birding, nature, and some more reasons to visit the state. And we're no longer going to say killing two birds with one stone. Saying killing two rats with one stone. And speaking of travel, let's see. What would you choose? A little tin of mints or a tin of chocolates? Well, John Alberon will tell us about this latest chocolate item called Chocolate Traveler. And I saw several Broadway shows last week, and I'll be reviewing or talking about Crybaby and a play called The New Century. But before I do, well, you know how it is. I have to do a commercial, and let's see which one. Well, of course, you know. What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale. All right, if you think that's bad, we'll talk about the chocolate later. But in the meantime, so what happened is back in, I guess it was 2005 that I went to Delaware, and we actually did some birding and some other little nature things. And so actually what I'm gonna like read to you is the article that I wrote that was entitled "It Was the Owls Who Gave a Hoot." The cool night air and a noisy bus took us into the raining darkness and silent woods of the White Clay Creek State Park. We debarked, and the engine was hushed. Stillness, and there was nothing to hear but the sounds of two grown men making owl noises. It was an owl prowl. We were looking to spot barred eastern screech or a great horned owl, as well as the cries of their mating sounds. Jeff Gordon and Jim White from the Delaware Nature Society continued their imitations until it appeared to be too much for their vocal cords. They then switched to the use of their iPods. But the aping sounds did not draw anything. I pictured the birds listening. Hey, Jay, the beings are here. Not a bad imitation. Let's just hang around and see what they do. I can't believe they're now using those tape sounds. Get the gang together. It's going to be a hoot. I don't want anyone to say a thing. Hey, pretty good simulation. You know, Charlie, that sounded a bit like Willet and Maggie trying to get it on. They're leaving. Let's follow them, but keep your distance. Hey, maybe afterwards we can also check out that all-night party. You know, kill two humans with one stone. With no reaction from the night visitors, Jeff and Jim decided that we should move on to another locale. Again, the sounds emerged from their vocal cords and then back to the iPods. Okay, gang, it's Bob White's turn. When we give you the signal, fly and perch yourself on the tree in front of them. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe what I'm hearing on that tape. They got that short-eared bum Barney squawking about the size of his pecker. Suddenly, there were sounds of a bird flapping its wings. The small and beautiful creature settled on a tree branch as one of the men shone a light upon it for our viewing. There he is, guys. Wilson told him to just sit there and look pretty while they gawk as if they've never seen an owl before. It wasn't enough to just view the light, brown, wide-eyed, feathery animal. Jim and Jeff were bent on hearing their breeding voices. More vocal and an iPod renditions followed. You know, I can stay up all night listening to this and watching their ridiculous reactions, but I have a fabulous idea. All of a sudden, the various sounds of our feathery friends echoed in the woods. And Jim and Jeff were finally content to have shown off their skills. Whoa. What have you got there, you common loon? I can't believe you brought your iPod. This is hysterical. Push the damn play button and let's take in their reactions. Wait a minute. Do you realize you taped Martin flirting with that blackbird Merle? Oy vey, his wife is going to kill him. Good to leave it. Shut it off and let's get the hell out of here before feathers fly. Well, 2 days later, we arrive at Pickering Beach, where the horseshoe crabs and migratory seabirds were gathering along the water's edge. As the horseshoe crabs emerge from the waters and drop their eggs, the birds dine on the protein, giving them the energy to move on. Meanwhile, the crabs continue to spawn. Various birds fly about as we meddle into the sex life of those large, hard-shelled sea creatures whose food value is of no use to us. Hey, what the heck is going on here? It's bad enough that these human beings refuse to give us privacy during our orgy. Now they're picking me up and looking at my anatomy. Put me down, you cement-headed creature. I've been waiting to wrap my pedipalps around that cute-looking limulus polyphemus for weeks, not to mention finding my way into her operculum. Thanks. Oh, my goodness, that human almost stepped on Shelley. Just in case you didn't know, we crabs play a vital, if little-known, role in the life of anyone who has received an injectable medication. An extract of our blood is used by the pharmaceutical and medical device industries to ensure that their products like intravenous drugs, vaccines, and medical devices are free of bacterial contamination. No other test works as easy or reliably for this purpose. I wonder how many of my kids those flying fishmongers have notched on. As the gnats chewed upon my face, neck, and head, I pondered about other parts of the trip that included a short tour of Rehoboth Beach. Yes, the quaintness and ambience of the inn at canalsquare.com. In Lewis, the great seafood at Sambo's Tavern. And my future return to find out how soybeans get converted to fuel. Well, as they say, to everything, turn, turn. Turn. Well, wait till they call in. Yeah, that's what I wrote. I will, at some point, get back down there to talk about the things with the soybeans, you know, like converting soybeans to fuel. That should be a gas. As I'm waiting for the guy to call in, let's hear I love songs. Let's hear here, I know. one of my favorites right now.
But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong, and I grew strong, and I learned how.
Hello.
Music.
Good. How are you?
Okay, Jim.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, Jim Rapp. Yeah. Did you hear my little thing about the birding?
No, I just got on the phone, and it's cool to hear the radio. No, I was out actually birding.
were you really?
Well, I'm out in the park with some friends, and there's actually great crested flycatchers calling, and yeah, it's good.
Yeah. So tell what happened? I went down there to do some bird watching. It was part of the press trip, and we went to first night we went on an owl prowl.
Yes.
So when I wrote the article, I wrote it also in terms of like how the owls were thinking.
Oh, cool! What are the owls thinking? I always wanted to know.
But that's what I just finished reading that on the air. So.
Oh, cool.
But tell us all why this seems to be like a lot of birding in Delaware. Why in Delaware in particular?
Well, I mean, Delaware's got a lot to offer. One, you know, when you think about who birders are, I mean, birders are found all over the U.S., and it's a growing hobby. There's an 8% growth in wildlife watching since 2006. So when you have all these urban folks who want to get out of the city on the weekends in Philadelphia, in New York, in Baltimore, Washington, it's a short drive. You know, price of gas may be a factor here. But the thing about Delaware that makes it great for birds is really the Delaware Bay. And the habitat Delaware has, you've got in the upper part of the state, you've got, you know, kind of hilly, rocky, upland forest. You get down to Delaware Bay, which is worldwide known for its beaches for shorebirds and where horseshoe crabs lay their eggs here in just a couple weeks. So when you combine the proximity of the state to all these urbanites who want to get out on the weekend and great bird habitat, it's like a perfect fit.
So what what kind of birds would you see? Is this like the time? It's coming up, right?
The
birding is right. Yeah.
Spring migration.
Spring migration. Yeah. When I went, I was looking to see when I went. It was in May, as a matter of fact, mm-hmm. and it was really for the birds. But what type of birds would people see?
Well, right now, we just actually, in the state of Delaware, we did a thing called the Delmarva Birding Weekend. It just ended Sunday. So as an example, here in late April, we counted 190 different species in about 5 days.
Wow.
And they're not hard to find. And these are, you know, guided trips that we offer. So we had about 400 birders go through. So that number alone has some, you know, impact with people. But it's more than that. It's when you break it down and it's the spring warblers. I mean, some folks love these little bits of jewelry that fly around the forest, these bright gold and bright blue birds that only come up here in the spring, some to nest, some to fly through. So the warblers are a big hit. Also migrating shorebirds. You know, the Delaware Bay is known for its shorebird migration, as we said. So birds such as the red knot and the ruddy turnstone, semi-palmated plovers that just love the Delaware beaches because it's where they feed, it's where they live. Then you also have raptors, you have late wintering birds who haven't left yet for the Arctic. We even saw birds like common loon in their summer feather, that beautiful, what you think about New England and Canada, that black and white, crisp colors. So it's a nice time of year because the winter birds are late leaving and the early spring migrants are coming in. And it kind of peaks in May. So May is really the primo month for spring migration.
So, that's where I got the feeling that that's why I want to... I'm doing the show like right now in case you know, people are, you know, want to go there. So like when you're doing bird watching, I mean, with the various birds, unless you're really, really into it, can you really distinctively look at like one bird that's like almost as like that almost looks like another, but say, you know, that's not a heron, that's a this or whatever, you know.
Sure, I think it's like any hobby, whether you're into art or music, you just kind of train yourself. So with birding, you start with real basic things. I mean, some of the best birding you'll ever do is in your own backyard or in your neighborhood, looking at birds like robins and northern cardinals and Carolina chickadees. And once you begin to learn shapes of birds, certain colors, flight patterns, it's almost like a puzzle. You start to piece these things together, and after a while, it's like anything else. You just become in tune with these types of features, these characteristics. A lot of birding in the spring is actually done with your ear. The spring warblers, for example, oftentimes are high up in the trees. So with a good guide, often you're kind of closing your eyes and using that sense of hearing that we don't use as much anymore, I don't think. And so birding is really a multi-sensory experience. Because you're seeing the colors, you're seeing them flying, you're listening for their song, and it's amazing how quickly you can begin to differentiate between, you know, the smaller songbirds, large raptors in the sky, birds on the water like ducks, wading birds like herons, and you realize before you know it, probably right now, Merle, you and I could go out, and I bet you probably know 50 or 60 different birds without really knowing that you know that. It's something we're kind of, as we grow up, you know, you're trained to look for certain things. So it's a lot of fun. And then you get into the really good birders are the ones that can tell, you know, very similar species apart by song, by the way they move. And sometimes it's very, very difficult. I know there's two birds here, for example, the American crow and the fish crow. They look identical, but their sound is different.
Oh, so again, as you were saying, like sound is a whole different way of, Yeah, so it's not like any of the birds can disguise themselves, huh, and say.
Yeah, not with their sounds. When they come up here in the spring, especially the ones that are coming here to nest, they immediately begin to set up territory, and so the song is used to kind of announce that they're here to ward off other birds from taking over their nesting site or their feeding areas. And so they're sitting. That's what makes birding so much fun. You know, other animals are very secretive. They hide underground or they hide in the trees. But the birds are out there, bright colors, singing. And all you need to get started is a pair of binoculars and a field guide. So for a very small investment, say, you know, $75, $100, you're ready. You're set. And, of course, as you get better and more interested, then you can spend a lot more money on optics and cameras. But I love birding because I can take a kid out, and for a very small investment, we can start. And it's just one more reason to get outside in nature, enjoy fresh air, walk in the woods, and really experience some of the great outside areas we have in Delaware and all over the peninsula here.
Are there any, like, specific, parks or et cetera that you would go to for this?
Any what?
Any specific, like, parks or, in other words, what actual destinations in Delaware would be the best place to go to?
Well, there are some great ones. Well, one thing I want to definitely mention is just this past December, some of our colleagues in Delaware produced the Delaware Birding Trail, and I believe you can go to the website. It's just www.delawarebirdingtrail.org, and it's a free map, and they'll actually mail you one. So it lists well over 20 different sites in the state of Delaware that are easy to get to, that have public access, or there's parking at some, at most, or all of them. There's restrooms at some. So, you know, sometimes you have to go way out in the woods to see birds, but the parks are great. But to name a couple, my favorites are places. There's two national wildlife refuges in Delaware. There's Bombay Hook National Wildlife Refuge near Dover, and there's Prime Hook National Wildlife Refuge near the Milton and Lewis area. You also have wonderful state parks like Killens Pond State Park, and Trap Pond State Park, and Cape Henlopen State Park. So the parks are wonderful. Then you've got some of these management areas. There's a place near Fenwick called Assawoman Wildlife Area, and it's a beautiful property, and there's towers you can crawl up into to see birds and ponds and marshes and forest. So, you know, there's all sorts of public lands, federal lands, state lands, sometimes county lands even, where you can visit birds, and great organizations. I want to definitely mention the Delmarva Ornithological Society, we call the DOS, Delaware Nature Society, Delaware Audubon, Delaware Division of Fish and Wildlife are all groups that you can go to the web, you can call them, and they'll help you find out where you want to go and what birds you want to see.
Oh, that sounds great. Now, let's say...
Delaware's really, really well into birding and a lot of support out there for folks who want to explore.
Now, do they have, let's say, as opposed to just offhand thinking about it, are there, like, places to stay specifically that, do they have, as opposed to, like, just staying in a hotel, are there any accommodations that specifically cater to this during the time?
There are more and more. Actually, I don't know of one particular one that just specializes in birders. I know that, for instance, like at the campgrounds in the state, some have cabins that are really nice because you're right in the park. So you just walk out your front porch or front door and you're there in the habitat. And again, camping is always good because you're staying right where the birds live. I know that some of the towns that are really embracing birding, where the properties in those towns are doing well, I want to mention, for instance, the Bethany Fenwick area. They're actually starting a birding festival that's worth mentioning in October. I believe it's October 17th through 19th of this year. So that's a good one. The towns of Lewis and Milton and Dover, even Seaford, Delaware. I've been talking to them about things in the winter like bald eagle watching along the Nanticoke River. There's a lot of towns that are really embracing birding. Also, I just remembered Milton, Delaware, I believe May 24th, has a horseshoe crab shorebird festival. And so it's designed to give people, kind of turn them on to the horseshoe crabs laying their eggs on the beaches and the shorebirds that come in to feed on those horseshoe crab eggs. So Delaware, through their tourism offices and chambers of commerce, are really beginning to embrace birding and welcome birders and accommodate them with early morning breakfast and coffees and things like this. So,
do people commonly spend like half a day, a whole day, or just doing bird watching?
So you know, it's all levels. It is people that go out for a morning on a guided hike. It is people who spend a half day. I'm doing something next Tuesday that we're calling the Delaware Birdathon, and this is a fundraiser by Habitat for Endangered Shorebirds. And what we're doing is we're getting up at midnight, and we're burning until the next midnight. So it's really pretty powerful stuff. And this is for the real, what we call the hardcore birders. So even I'm not that level. I'm going with other people, but it's a lot of fun. So, yeah, birding is something you do in the morning. Morning and evening are best because in the middle of the day, when the sun's up, it's really, the birds kind of quiet down. But sunrise, by far, is the best time for most birds. But like you did, you can go out at night and look for owls and rails. So it's really a 24-hour experience.
Yeah, it sounds great. Tell now, what is this whole thing about the horseshoe crabs? Tell us what is that all about?
Well, this is one of those really odd things in tourism. I mean, naturalists and nature people know this, but the Delaware Bay is the number one spot on planet Earth where these prehistoric animals related to spiders crawl out of the water at a full moon in May, and they lay their eggs on the beach right in the sand. And there's been a phenomenon for, you know, ever and ever that as the horseshoe crabs come up out of the water by the thousands to lay their eggs on the beach, the little shorebirds come in, and those eggs are very fat rich. So when you're a tiny little bird like a red knot and you're flying from Argentina to Canada to lay your own eggs, you've got to eat very energy rich food. So this very interesting phenomena has been occurring in the Delaware Bay well before human beings were even walking around in the state of Delaware. And so they still do it, and I think that's such a cool thing. So they lay the eggs on the beach, the shorebirds come in. People that are into this sort of phenomenon come out by the thousands to see this phenomenon. So in a way, I heard my friend Eric Stiles, who works for New Jersey Audubon, once say, when he was growing up in the Delaware Bay, that was his Serengeti. And when you think about Africa and the migration of wildebeest or elephants or all those big charismatic animals, well, we don't have those in Delaware. But we do have one of the world's greatest stopovers for migrating shorebirds, and it's worth seeing at least once in your life. Everybody should do it. It's pretty cool.
Now, one of the things I was wondering, like when you're getting dressed for this, you know, like,
yeah.
What I found like it was the gnats.
Yeah.
What do you do to deal with the gnats, by the way?
Well, as always, you know, going to nature is all things, including the bugs. So I think the best thing to do is always dress for where you're going. So if it is an area like a salt marsh where there's mosquitoes, you know, layer up. There's so much wonderful outdoor gear now from very lightweight clothing that you can tuck your pants into your socks and keep your skin covered so you're not getting mosquitoes or ticks. Also various organic to chemical compounds that you can use for warding off insects. So I always recommend, you know, think about where you're going, look at the temperature, you know, look at the weather, and dress appropriately so that if you're out in the morning and it's cool, you can peel layers off in the afternoon. If you go to a place where there's bugs, I like these lemony organic insect repellents, so I don't like the chemicals so much. And then in a lot of places, quite frankly, where the bugs aren't real bad. I'm always surprised people think that every place in nature has lots of bugs. I go to places like Trap Pond, which is a cypress swamp, and cypress swamps, you don't have lots of bugs. It's very mosquito-free. It's a very pleasant experience in the summertime.
So if you're, you know, a little unnerved about it, you can find the places that, you know, that don't really have the bugs. I had found, by the way, because somebody had told me this and I saw it true, that if the gnats are going near your face,
yeah,
the best way to get them away from your face is to raise your hand.
Yeah.
Because gnats will go to the highest point.
Yeah.
On,
that's good. I never heard that. That's a great trip.
Yeah.
That's a great trip.
I did that. It's funny because I was at some park at one time and walking around in the gardens and whatever, and these gnats were around, and I told a whole bunch of people. I just said, just keep your hand up, and they'll go to the highest point. And they're walking around. See everybody walking around with their hands up, you know.
Well, there you go. So I learned something from you. I'm going to try that next time I'm out.
Oh, yeah, try that. It's really weird. You know, they're not, they don't, that's the only way to get them away from your face. What were the best, like, you think this, is there a lot in the south part of Delaware? Because I'm going to have somebody from tourism from the south area.
Oh, yeah.
So if you can go birding, you can, like, you know, see a lot of attractions plus.
Well, birding's the kind of thing where, again, I like to think of it this way. It's like you can bird, but also like in the beaches. I mean, I have a lot of friends that work in the resort towns, places like Rehoboth and Dewey and Bethany and Fenwick, the village town of Lewis and Milton. So you can stay in a big hotel or a small B&B. You've got great restaurants. You've got live music at night. And that's what I like to do. I think a lot of birders are like that. You know, we don't just go birding. When I'm done birding, I want to go get a drink and talk about what I saw and meet other people that like to bird. And it's not like fishing in a way, I think, that many of us are social and we like to tell stories and hear what other people are seeing. So Delaware has that, the best of both worlds. You have these wonderful resort towns. You have quiet little villages where you can get like a B&B type feel and local restaurant, and you're surrounded by all this nature. One nice thing about southern Delaware is you've got the beaches. So you've got beaches like Cape Henlopen State Park. You've got the Delaware beaches, the inland bays, these little shallow kind of coastal bays that are just loaded with birds. And then you kind of move into the agricultural part of the county and the state where you see fields and forests. And then as you kind of cruise towards the west, you actually enter the drainage of the Chesapeake Bay. So, again, rivers like the Nanticoke River, which drains from Delaware and these cypress swamps, these great old giant trees, down into the Chesapeake in the state of Maryland, you got really distinct habitats. So I'd say southern Delaware, different birds live in different habitats. So you go from beachfront to marshes and inland bays to fields and forests and rivers. And so you just multiply out from those habitats the different species you can see. So yeah, southern Delaware is really a birder's paradise. It really is.
Okay, so now you were saying, what was the website so you can see with the trail?
Yeah, it's really simply, it's just the DelawareBirdingTrail.org. As a matter of fact, I've got one. I'm going to get it out to make sure I have the address right. But if you Google Delaware Birding Trail or just type that in, it should take you right there.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful map. Matter of fact, the map is free, and they'll mail you one. So, yep, DelawareBirdingTrail.org. I just checked it. And it's a beautiful map. Again, I wanted the partners there were the Delmarva Ornithological Society, Delaware Audubon, Delaware Department of Natural Resources, and Delaware Division of Fish and Wildlife. And a good friend of ours, Jeff Gordon, kind of put this together. Jeff's a wonderful birder, lives in Delaware. So, again, you get a free map.
I think that was the guy. Is he into owls, I think?
Oh, yeah, Jeff's a good owler. Oh, Jeff's good at everything.
That's the guy that took us around.
Oh, you know, Jeff, you know then how good he is. He can stand in one spot, and just using his ears, he'll point out 20 different species.
Yep. That's right. It was Jeff Gordon and Jim White. Those are the ones.
Oh, Jim White. Yeah, Jim's a good friend, too. Great guys.
All right. Well, okay. We're going to go on to talk about chocolate in a minute. So.
Oh, I like chocolate, too.
So you can, if you want, you can hang on and listen in or go to the website, either one. But in the meantime, Jim, I really appreciate your calling, and I hope people get to go to Delaware and really have enjoy themselves with it.
Absolutely.
I certainly did.
And when you talk to the tourism office, again, there's events. We just finished one birding weekend. We have more coming in the fall. So those festivals are nice, too. That's a great way to introduce yourself to the state because you're going to go with a guide. They're going to turn you on to the parks. And then you can come back over and over again.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Thank you so much for
Thank you.
All this interesting stuff. Even though it's, as I said, it's for the birds.
It's for the birds. We're all for the birds in Delaware.
Yeah. Okay. Take care, Jim. Have a good evening.
You too, Merle. Thank you so much. Wonderful talking with you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, we're going to cut to a quick commercial, and then we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, chocolate.
Thank you for calling JetBlue. May I help you?
My cousin was telling me you guys have extra leg room.
Uh-huh. We have extra leg room as compared to a normal coach seat.
Okay. If I don't have an extra leg, can I use that room for something else?
No. That is not what the extra leg implies. We took out one whole row of seats, and that gave the rest of those rows a couple of extra inches of leg room. I understand what you mean. The words extra leg imply that, but it has nothing to do with having an extra leg.
I'm a pretty literal person.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be taking it very literally.
I guess a little too literally.
Okay. Is there anything else I can help you with?
I think that's it. You've been pretty helpful.
Thanks for calling JetBlue.
Dear traveler, stretch out. We now have the most legroom in coach. Visit us at JetBlue.com. Sincerely, JetBlue, based on average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines.
I just love that commercial. Okay, so let's get you on here. We're going to talk about chocolate. Yes, chocolate. You're on the air. John,
can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
I can hear you as well.
Yes.
Wow. I don't know how these radio hookups work, but it worked.
Yes. Isn't it interesting?
Yeah. I mean, you knew I was on. And
oh, yeah. I could see you. It's like I have this switchboard.
Oh, you can
in front
see
of
me
on
too.
The computer.
Good thing
I
didn't
so
cut
I
my haircut.
I'm sorry?
Good. You can see me, too. Good thing I'm dressed.
Oh. by the way, I got the samples. I tried the chocolates.
Yeah.
There was only one I didn't get. The one with the chocolate with the raspberry. Oh, God,
yeah.
that must be outrageous. Anyway, let's tell everybody what this is all about.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Can I do that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The Chocolate Traveler. It's all about portability and taking care of fine, excellent European-style chocolate. Because at least my experience in America has been that we don't package good chocolate in a way that is respectful to the chocolate. We put it in bars and big slabs that you have to break and get your hand messy and drop little crumbles or drip on your clothes, and you can't protect the chocolate if you don't want to finish it all. It's not reclosable. It's not easy to put in your purse or briefcase and travel with it. So the Chocolate Traveler has solved those problems by being in pre-cut, portion-controlled slices that fit into a small, handy travel tin, a round tin that holds either 8 wedges or 16 wedges. It allows you to save your favorite chocolate for later and keep it fresh for the next day or two.
And you know, by the way, portion control depends on your own control too.
it depends on discipline. That's true.
Yes, it does. If you just, it's like rather than having a mint, if you're going to have a mint, you're not going to have the whole tin of mints.
Exactly, and mints give you something that is sturdy and will withstand several days, weeks, or even months of usage so that the product stays fresh and doesn't break. And in the case of mints, the aroma doesn't permeate your purse or your kitchen because it isn't properly sealed. And that's what we've done with chocolate.
Now, the chocolates, they're from Belgium, the Belgian chocolates?
I source most of my chocolate for most of my flavors directly from Belgium. We do use some blends. We do use some domestic American chocolate. There are some good ones. And so it depends on the flavor, what we're trying to create. But basically, Belgian is my primary source.
All right. So now let's tell these people, and so as they drool, tell them the flavors, the different...
Well, we have 10 flavors. We have our traditional flavors, which are milk chocolate, white chocolate, and a bittersweet chocolate. We do the bittersweet at 70% cocoa solids, which we find to be the upper end of the range when people want a true dark chocolate with all the healthful antioxidants that are contained in it. They like it to be over 60%, over 65%. When you get up to about 70%, you can start to have some bitter qualities. Our 70% is very smooth and not bitter at all.
Oh, no.
So
I know that.
Yeah. We also have our classic dark collection. It's 4 dark chocolate-based products. One is with orange, one is with raspberry, one is with mint, and one is with coffee. Then we have our international collection, which is arguably our most interesting 3 flavors. We have a dark chocolate with tiramisu. We have a milk chocolate with dulce de leche. And we have our white chocolate with creme brulee.
You know, but by the time I'm going to have to break for a commercial, by the way, at some point, just to get a piece of chocolate. Talking about this. I was avoiding that. You know, it's first of all, I want to let you know before we get into the things about the tins, I want to let you know that, like, I do find the chalk is like, if you do have one wedge,
mm-hmm.
that you have actually gotten that, I need a piece of chocolate out of your system.
Well, you know,
that the wedge is enough.
The wedge is definitely enough because it's pure chocolate. And in the case of the bittersweet, it's very high cocoa content. And that tends to satisfy thoroughly, as opposed to a Hershey's or an M&M Mars, where there's not a lot of cocoa content and you're left wanting more. They substitute with a lot of sugar. Sugar makes you want more sugar, and you're
right.
left kind of unsatisfied. Whereas if you just start with a really excellent quality chocolate, you're going to get your satisfaction much sooner with far less calories.
And I must say, even I have to tell you, even the milk chocolate, I'm not a milk chocolate eater.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say that I even enjoyed the milk chocolate.
Well,
wow.
Yeah,
wait a minute. Wait, this is even a killer. This is even better. I am a person who will absolutely not touch white chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
I had, it wasn't just the plain white chocolate. I think
it was the
creme brulee. Oh,
yeah. Is that the most unique flavor? That flavor, because I do a lot of trade shows and sampling, and so I get to see reactions as people have a choice of what they want to taste. And I'm always just blown away by the reaction that we get on the creme brulee white chocolate. It's shocking. It's surprising to people is what it is. They may have an expectation, or maybe they don't have any expectation, and they're always so positively surprised when they try that flavor.
Yeah, it's not disgustingly sweet. That's what I find
mm-hmm.
with white chocolate. Of course, what happens with white chocolate, in case people don't understand, white chocolate is not really chocolate because it's the chocolate liqueur. That the chocolate liquor is removed, but you have
right. That's correct.
Cocoa butter.
Yeah, basically white chocolate is primarily cocoa butter and sugar and vanilla
and
milk.
Yeah, and
but
usually
chocolate as we know it is made
yeah.
up of cocoa butter and cocoa solids or cocoa
right.
liqueur, which is the dark brown chocolate taste you're used to.
Right.
So white chocolate doesn't have that. It just has the buttery, smooth consistency without the chocolate flavor.
Right, but what I had found with white chocolate is they're oversweet,
mm-hmm.
and that's
yeah.
why usually that I wouldn't even bother. But for people, the people who are allergic to chocolate eat white chocolate. That's,
they
you know.
Do. I mean, yeah.
But this is even tastier to have the creme brulee in it.
Creme brulee is a real favorite flavor for a lot of Americans. I mean, it's their favorite dessert in a restaurant. So to be able to bring that flavor combined with a chocolate base, even though it's not a dark chocolate base, really kind of hits the spot with the combination of creamy chocolatiness and that creme brulee flavor.
Now, the other thing I wanted to get in is make sure we get it to talk about the tins.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting looking tins.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say it was funny because I saw the chocolates. I was over at the Gay Expo in New
okay.
York when
is that
I saw this.
Okay, you met Miriam there. I got
yeah,
you.
And mm-hmm. and a lot of times when I go to the expos, I always like when I walk around, I kind of look to say, all right, who's going to be gay friendly now? You know, you know, who wants gay money? You know, whatever.
Right.
I mean, I got to tell you, the funniest one was Hershey's Resort and Spa. When I saw one time, I went, oh, really? And they've yet to give me a photo of either two men or two women for my article, but. But it wasn't until, and I guess I didn't even realize, but it wasn't until that I got the sample tins that I said, I was looking at one, I said, it looks like there's two women on that tin. And it really does. Are they?
Well, I mean, it's the
and
Gay
then
Expo.
I see the rainbow flag.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, they, you know, so It basically you can. Do you do the tins? Do you you know, like, if people want anything in particular, with the tins?
Yeah, I mean, the main line, the Choco Traveler brand, usually portrays a male and a female. But for a large community, you know, we can specifically, you know, design for the community. And I happen to think that if you only show a heterosexual couple, you're kind of by default sort of saying, well, we don't want to appeal to other communities.
Right.
So when the opportunity came to be at the Gay and Lesbian Expo, I started thinking, well, my goodness, there should be gay and lesbian tins for the community, of course.
Yeah.
So we went right to work.
you can, like, let's say if I wanted a tin, like, I do the publicity for the New York Sharks women's tackle football team.
Okay, so if you want to do a custom tin for them?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a whole custom labeling program where we treat those custom tins the same way we do our own brand, which means we design the tin, top, bottom, side, full color, full embossing, by the way. I mean, they have dimension, three-dimensional quality to them. They're not quick projects. They take about 90 days to complete from start to finish. And we do require a minimum of about a couple thousand tins, but you can take them over a period of a year. You don't have to take possession of all of them immediately.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we keep empty tins in our factory, and as you want fresh product, we will produce the chocolate and send out the tins case by case to you. We just ask that you use up your 2,000 or 3,000 tins in a period of about a year. And depending on how many tins you want to order and the chocolate you pick and all of that, the pricing can be very affordable.
Wow, that's great. So, yeah. Now, in terms of getting the chocolate, are they in the stores, is the Chocolate Traveler?
Yeah. We have some national accounts. Trader Joe's handles.
Trader Joe's.
Yeah, our bittersweet chocolate is sold at Trader Joe's. We're sold on Amazon.com. We're sold in a number of grocery stores, mostly in California because that's where our headquarters is.
Right.
Obviously, we do a lot of business on our website, thechocolatetraveler.com. You can get anything and everything we carry, obviously, is on the website. And we do have a lot of small grocery chains and mom-and-pop stores, gift shops, gourmet shops, natural food stores all over the country, serviced by distributors or brokers. So you may or may not find it in your local area, but you can always find it on the website.
And what's an approximate price that people should expect to buy?
Usually at a retail store, a gourmet store, the tin that holds 8 wedges, the 1.75-ounce tin, is usually about $2.99 on the shelf.
Which is not terrible. That's not terribly expensive.
No.
Not for good chocolate.
It's excellent chocolate.
Yeah, it's excellent chocolate, yeah. So that's worth it.
Right. If you're a chocoholic and you're only looking for, you know, large quantities to consume, of course you can find cheaper American
chocolate. Yeah, right.
But if you're, you know, if you're looking to treat your chocolate properly and have an excellent experience, and by the way, I should point out, one you can share very well with others because of the print slices and all, then, you should expect to pay about $3 for the tin of chocolates.
That's really great.
Yeah, well,
hopefully I'll be talking to you more about this. Who knows? We may have a commercial going next week on this.
Well, heck.
Yes.
Let's do it. Do you ever come out to California, Meryl?
As a matter of fact, my next trip to California is at the end of May.
Well, you should be coming
to Southern
Mateo. California. Oh, to San Mateo.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, Northern California.
Which is, yeah, that's right. That's near San Francisco, right?
Yeah, it's just about 30 miles south of San Francisco.
Oh,
if you ever
okay.
come down to the Los Angeles area, you're going to have to look us up and we'll bring
you. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll make sure I get a press trip to go out there. What I'll do for chocolate, huh? Oh, God. You might want to think about another well, I don't know if you want to call it a flavor, but maybe have one with crunched up little nibs in it, chocolate nibs.
You know, I've had some requests for that, and we can do it. They have to be very small to get through our depositing machine, but we can do
right.
it. And, yeah, if that tends to be a trend of something that's going to stick, we'll be happy to provide.
Okay. Well, John, thanks for talking to us about this.
Thank you.
I'm going to continue talking about Delaware in a moment. I'm going to have to first, break for commercial and grab a wedge.
Right.
That's a good wedgies. When you get your wedge, getting wedgy. So
it's all about discipline, Meryl.
Yeah, I know. I'll be good. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, John.
It was a
calling
pleasure,
in
Meryl.
And telling us about this as I drool.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you soon.
All righty. Take care.
Bye-bye. Oh, yes. Well, before we continue going back to Delaware, yes, I will take a quick commercial break. let's do something then. Well, what the heck? Another food one.
Italy, Spain, Greece, Turkey. Stuff it. We do at Santa Barbara Olive Company. Jalapenos, sun-dried tomatoes, almonds, blue cheese, stuff produced in California. And we stuff some of our cold-pressed olive oils with California garlic and herbs grown right here in our backyard. Our olive oils have been pitted against some of the finest imports, and guess who exceeds in taste tests? Santa Barbara Olive Company. It's the stuff that makes a product great.
Well, no, I didn't really have time to get the chocolate, but that's okay. I'm going to eat after this show. But that's okay. Scott, if you want to talk about some of the restaurants down in the southern area of Delaware, you can do that too. Get us all drooling if you want.
I just crammed a bunch of chocolates in my mouth. I'm trying to swallow them. I'm all fired up on chocolates after that. We actually just came off of a chocolate festival not too long ago in downtown Rehoboth Beach, so that's...
Okay.
Yeah, everybody loves chocolate, you know, traveling and throw some chocolate in there. So, that's what's not to like there.
Oh, yeah. And these are great. They're really, they're in tins, which I think, I forgot to ask them. I haven't tested them in terms of how they hold out, like, when you're traveling, you know, like, mints or something else, you know.
Right,
you can stick them. But how much heat can they take, or if you stick the tin, and you have to make sure that when you have this, like when you're going through the security, it doesn't go off because it's a tin, you know.
Well, Merle, I think you're gonna have to test it personally when you drive out to southern Delaware this summer.
Oh, okay.
And you can tell me. Then you can just firsthand and say
did
they hold true to form.
Yes, that's what we're going to see. I'll test them out. And I'll share because they're little wedges and I can share them. So
you were telling me you were in Lewis not too long ago, right?
Yes, stopped in. This is I was telling everybody I was in 2005, went down on a press trip and we stayed overnight in Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
The Canal Inn?
It's the Inn at Canal Square, which is right on the canal there. Yeah, it's right in the downtown historic Lewis, which is spelled with an E, by the way. A lot of people it's from Lewis, England. It's kind of like a sister city, and it's the oldest city, first town, the first state. So that's its claim to fame.
Is it?
Yeah, the first town in the first state.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yes.
You never know. Another
That's
piece
right.
Of, another thing that's shoving my head.
That's
for me
right.
To try to remember. Yeah. especially remembering. You know, I'm a member of CRAFT. Are you? CRAFT?
No.
It stands for Can't Remember a Freaking Thing.
Well, I'm getting there, but I'm not a full-fledged member. You know, I'm not like one of the directors of there yet. I'm just a member in the wings.
All right, so tell us all about your whole area there.
Oh, no problem. Southern Delaware, a lot of people, it's funny because if you go around the country, Delaware, you go out west through Delaware, that's up by New York, right? A lot of people really don't really, who aren't from the region, don't know where Delaware's situated. It's really not too far east from the Washington, D.C. area. It's about 2.5 hours east. And I heard Jim Rapp on your show earlier today, and he focused on the Delmarva Peninsula, and we're kind of right in the middle of that Delmarva Peninsula, in between the Chesapeake Bay and the Atlantic Ocean, and our beaches are right on the Atlantic Ocean. So, we're traditionally the area Southern Delaware. People know it's by Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. It's a famous beach town. We just talked about Lewis. There's Bethany Beach. There's Fenwick Island. There, the inland areas are Georgetown, Milton, Seaford is a lot of people been moving into that area. It's the taxes are very kind compared to other areas. So we get a lot of transplants moving in addition to our visitors here.
And just give me some ideas of well, we obviously know that there's birding, and we've got the birding, and we got the crabs, the horseshoe crabs screwing. We got that.
That's right. Yeah. Especially this time of year,
as we watch them have their orgies.
And yes.
But other than that, what other attractions are there?
What our visitors really seem to enjoy, and that's from what I've seen and what I talked to, it comes down to the small town charm and the friendliness. It seems like as our country gets more and more homogenous by the day, with your strip malls and your and the suburban sprawl everywhere, it seems like people come out here, and it's kind of refreshing because what you have is Southern Delaware, which is the county of Sussex County. It's kind of made up of a collection of small, quaint towns. Some are beach towns. Others are inland towns, coastal towns, and riverside villages. So that in itself is kind of like a nice welcome breath of fresh air. Beautiful scenery, obviously. The beaches are kind of our claim to fame. We have about 26 miles of Atlantic coastline. So it's traditionally it's been a great summertime resort, kind of a drive-to destination from the Mid-Atlantic region. That's really where the bulk of our visitors come from, which would be Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia, on up through Baltimore, all of Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and up into New York. So that's kind of where a lot of people, they find it, especially now with the gas prices rising by the day or by the second. And people are shortening their trips, and hopefully they'll stay a few extra days versus coming 2 or 3 days. So they like to. We're kind of a getaway destination for people coming out of the city, not necessarily for an entire week, but more like 3 or 4 days is kind of what we see people visiting for. And so we're trying to extend it, creating weekday specials starting this summer. So kind of creating more incentives to spend more time here and less time on the road, spending money in your gas tank.
Well, say for instance, if you're not driving, is there any alternate ways of getting there?
No. I think you have to drive here pretty much, and then there's in the summertime there is bus service, but there's not really direct trains. And the nearest major airports are Baltimore, Washington, and Philadelphia. There is a private airport in the middle of the county in Georgetown, but it's not commercial. So therefore, it's predominantly a drive-to destination. And people get here, they park the cars, and they leave them parked. And they walk around, that's part of the appeal. Lots of our towns are very pedestrian-friendly, like Lewis. I mean, you've seen that in Lewis when you were there.
Right, yeah.
You get into these towns, these beach towns, and there's just a huge collection of restaurants, downtown shopping. We have outlet shopping out on our main highway here. So it's a little bit, a little something for everybody. I think it's, again, people just really enjoy the beach, but when there's plenty of other things to do, there's always going to be that one overcast day when you come, even for 2 or 3 days, there's going to be, you know, or maybe you hit sunburn. The office I represent is Southern Delaware Tourism, which is the Convention Visitor Bureau for Sussex County. One of our main missions is to kind of create itineraries, work with our tourism partners in the county to always have something to do, always be making suggestions. And our chambers of commerce do a wonderful job in each town in promoting and posting that information.
Is there, is there any entertainment?
There's plenty of entertainment. One thing that's kind of cool is each town has its own personality. Like, for instance, if you wanted to get that kind of New England feel, you could go to Lewis. You can go out on a charter boat. You can do a lighthouse tour on certain weekends. It's got very New England type of atmosphere, seaside town. And then just about 8 miles down the road, you can drive or you can bike. There's some wonderful new bike trails into downtown Rehoboth Beach, which is kind of your quintessential beach boardwalk town. So you have the boardwalk amusements, you have everything from little kid rides to just adults. There's shows. There's going to be Broadway shows at a few venues. Broadway style shows. So there's more of an entertainment offering, predominantly in the summer season between Memorial Day and Labor Day. There's wonderful fireworks weekend, 4th of July on the boardwalk in Rehoboth, also South and Bethany. But getting back to what I was saying, you kind of can take advantage of each personality. You go down to Bethany Beach and Fenwick, and they call them the quiet resorts down there. So it's just kind of a lot of just non-commercials and more peace and quiet. And again, a lot of eco-tourism for those who like to get outside and walk around, kayak, and just get outside.
Now, if I go to that area, by the way, will there be some place, because I'm looking to see about this thing about the soybeans. Are there any places in that area at all that I can go to, I guess, a soybean farm to see them converting soybean into gas?
I think you'd have to go up into Kent County, which is the county north of us, I think, is where you're seeing that going on. So the particular place and everything, I don't have a direct reference to, but I believe that's where I read they're doing a lot of that work and research for that, which is fascinating.
Have you ever tried, like, I don't know how it works. I mean, do you know if you have to have a particular type of car to use this, you know, the gas that's made from soybeans?
Are they going
that far?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, I'll find out the answer, because I just think it's, with the gas prices, that would be a great thing.
Right.
If you can subsidize, that's what I understand, that you can't really, like, fill up your tank with soybean gas, but that you could fill up your stomach with soybean gas, but you know, and fart into your tank if you want. But
soybean burgers on the side, sure.
Yeah, right. I'm curious to see, like, for instance, if they start like using it for, let's say, for farm equipment, to see if they, you know, if they're doing it even just for that. That would be interesting. Well, I'll talk with you and other people in tourism to have it, you know, set me up to come down there and do something, you know.
There's been, you know, on that whole front too, down here in Sussex County, there's a lot of potential in the works by way of kind of earth-friendly alternative fuels. I mean, wind power is an up-and-coming discussion point here. There's a lot of talk of offshore wind farms, onshore wind farms, and hopefully, you know, we'll get to that point where we can become one of the areas in the United States to capitalize and utilize that source of energy, kind of like what they're doing out west, a lot of those wind farms. But
I've seen
talk
those
of being offshore.
Yeah.
And also too, spray irrigation too, like with wastewater treatment, instead of dumping, you know, instead of having the water flow out into various areas. There's a lot of efforts underway to use that to spray a lot of the agricultural fields here in Sussex. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Well, I must say I am looking forward to I went to Lewis and just like dashed through Rehoboth Beach. I didn't get to really see that. So that's one of the places that I want to. I'm looking at a destination. By the way, how do you have any sense like the driving time basically from New York City to like Rehoboth Beach?
Sure. Yeah, you're looking at between probably three and a half hours from the city, depending on, you know, barring any bad traffic. But about three and a half, 3 hours, 45 minutes to be safe.
Okay, so from New York City, you're saying?
Just from out there, yeah. I'd say three and a half to four now, I think, about drive time.
Is it fast and easier or whatever? Isn't that the ferry? There's that ferry that goes from New Jersey?
Yeah, the Cape May Lewis ferry is a great trip because it takes about 70 minutes from one cape to the other. And the best way, if you're north traveling south, the best way to go on that ferry is just to stay on the Garden State Parkway in New Jersey all the way to Cape May, and it's easy to find.
You just put your car on the ferry?
You can drive on the ferry. You can park. In the season, there's a lot of pedestrian trips and side trips. So if you're driving through, it's a perfect way to stay in stay with your car, get out, stretch, take advantage of the ferry. And you mentioned birding. A lot of people actually do birding on the ferry on their back and forth. There's a lot of cool sights, birds and others to see.
Oh, cool!
You come across, and then that takes you right into Lewis, and then you can just drive on out.
Oh, so that's where it takes you, which is great. So if you want, for people who just let's say want to go to Rehoboth Beach,
yes,
that's probably
it's a great method of travel.
The best way to go. That sounds fabulous. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Especially
in the seasonal months, when you can get out and step outside. I mean, it's a really nice trip, and they do a nice job there with the ferry and their schedule. It's pretty. They'll have a lot of ferries going back and forth as the season kicks in. So the schedule's pretty frequent with the trips.
Do you find now? I'm just like an idea. If it went like July or August, it's going to be really hot. Or do you find because it's like off the waters, it's not as bad?
We have nature's air conditioner, the ocean, so it's never that hot. You always get some nice breezes. So we're very fortunate that way. It's beautiful weather.
Okay, I understand now. There was something that you have to like the tall ships that come in September or something.
Yeah, and when you came, we were getting ready for the 375th anniversary of Lewis and Delaware, since that was the first one. Dating back to the 1631 Dutch colony. So the tall ships was part of that celebration. That they came in September of 2006, and we'd like to get them back. There's nothing set. There is the state tall ship, the Kalmar Nickel, that makes trips back and forth. It will be docked in Lewis, I believe, starting late July into August at the Cape May Lewis Ferry Terminal, Lewis, and there will be public rides available for that. So that's kind of cool. You can go out in the tall ship, and it just really dresses up the waterfront there. It certainly gets a lot of attention.
Okay. Well, I have a feeling I might just see you because I'm looking at it as a destination to go to in the next couple of months or so.
Can I plug our website for the events? And it's a great resource for everything that is Southern Delaware. A lot of people like to use it because they can see what's going on as far as the events, whether they're in the weekend or week. And we update it for almost daily, so it's a great resource. It is www.visitsoutherndelaware.com. All spelled out.
Okay.
Visit SouthernDelaware.com. And then you can go there to get a free visitor's guide, a list of off-season events. You can join our e-newsletter. We send one out every month, which gives you up-to-date happenings, specials. And one thing we really try to promote now, and a lot of our hotels are creating more and more, are the hotel packages, especially with the summer season upon us. They're going to try to do everything they can to help stretch out the dollars that are being put into our travelers' gas tanks. And there's some pretty cool incentives going on, whether they're gas-related. And what we do is we post our hotel packages by interest. So if you want to kind of a girls' weekend, or if you want a romantic weekend, there's even some eco-tourism packages. There's I think we just have some Mother's Day packages we just posted, getting ready for a couple weeks from now. So we try to do a list all the packages by interest, and then, of course, take a look at our events and what's going on. And there's other things, too. I mean, you can go town by town on there. And so just wanted to make your listeners aware of that.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to returning. And I thank you for sharing this info with us.
Oh, yeah. Hey, we're getting excited here. It's the water's just starting to turn. I mean, I love this time of year, especially here in Southern Delaware, whether you're on the beach or if you're inland. It's a great place to be outside, to walk around, and just to take advantage of everything we have to offer. So looking forward to a really good summer and a good year here in Southern Delaware.
Okay. Yeah, I'm hoping to
look. So come see us. Look me up, Merle. Look me up, Merle. Call me. I'll get you set up. We'll have fun.
We'll have lunch.
We'll have lunch. We'll do lunch. We'll eat some chocolate.
We'll do lunch, yeah. Okay. All right.
Is there any? Do you have any other questions or?
No, I'm fine. No,
okay.
I want to perk people's attention, not give them all the information. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you having me on the show and thanks for letting me call in.
Yeah, because what I'll probably do, like when I go down to Delaware, I'm going to try to get this set up where I'm there on a Thursday, and we can actually broadcast from someplace down there. Can do the
show
right
down
there. That would be great.
I like the sounds of that.
Okay. All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Merle.
All right. Thanks. Bye bye.
Have a good night. Bye.
Oh yes. Delaware. That's a great destination. Okay. Going to take a break. Speaking of boats, I'm going to take a music break, and then I want to talk about some of the Broadway shows that I saw.
One true time.
Shows I saw Crybaby at the Marquee Theater and The New Century, which is performing at the Lincoln Center. Well, Crybaby, I don't know, you know, it's a new musical. I don't know how long, you know, that probably will run for a while versus The New Century, which is only going to run till I think the beginning or middle of June, unfortunately. I hope it goes on the road. Just to give you an idea, okay, with Crybaby, no tears are shed at Crybaby. A lot of laughter, though. John Walters' movie turned Broadway musical. Well, the show opens up with hearing, good morning, I'm Mrs. Vernon Williams, president of the Baltimore Women's Club, and welcome to our first annual anti-polio picnic and vaccination carnival. There is a burst into song about both the picnic and pride in being square. Mrs. VW there then has her granddaughter, Allison, present the polio poster boy of the year and rolls him out in an iron lung. Musical numbers get the picture. Yes. Okay. Enter Wade Walker, a James Dean-like figure known as Crybaby. Well, he heads up the unsquare group leader of the Rock and Drape Gang, and he tells us that the Crybaby nickname was given because, as he says, I cried when my parents died, but never since and never again. And by the way, the square group are singers known as Baldwin and the Whiffles. So Allison is kind of hooked up with Baldwin, but drops her socks when she meets Crybaby. Well, by this time, I'm convinced that this Broadway musical is a cross between Grease, All Shook Up, and West Side Story, a calm one, though. We also get to meet a few other great characters, such as Mona, who is known as Hatchet Face, and Lenora, a crazy crybaby follower who has even carved her arms with his name. Let me pause here to comment the actors, though. So it's like Tori Ross, who portrays Mona, and Ali Muse, who gives the audience more than belly laughs with her role as Lenora. It's really funny. Back to the plot, as Crybaby and Allison have fallen in love. Well, they're alone at his special place when he sings. The stars up above, well, I don't know the tune, but the words, the stars up above shine light on our love. The night, just like us, is still young, and it's long and it's slow, and I need to know, girl, can I kiss you with tongue? This is not a hilarious number. Well, anyway, James Snyder, who plays Crybaby, and Elizabeth Stanley, who plays Allison, they do fine as leads. But much of the hilarity goes to Christopher Hank and Ali Muse. One person that you may certainly recognize is Harriet Harris, who portrays Mrs. Vernon Williams. She had the role of Felicia Tillman on Desperate Housewives. And kudos also goes out to Rob Ashford for his fabulous choreography. As for the songs, I personally found there were some songs that are memorable due to the lyrics, but I didn't find not necessarily due to the music. Talent is just fine. I recommend the show for people who have a sense of a bit of warped humor. You'll love it. Now, New Century, oh, God, that is so funny. I would love, maybe next week I'm going to read you parts of this. This was so funny. This opens up. It opens up. Helene is there. It's, well, let me tell you, the New Century is Rob Paul Rudnick's comedies called Pride and Joy, and Mr. Charles, currently of Palm Beach, Crafty, and the New Century, and it's combined to create an outrageously funny theater. Especially, well, you'll love it, especially if you like, if you're into gay culture, this is a hoot. Well, okay, to give you an idea, okay, so Pride, it has Helene Nadler, Linda Lavin, who's in a play. She's like a Jewish mom, and she's sitting and speaking to the audience, kind of, and it's her first time meeting, of the Massapequa chapter of the parents of lesbians, gays, bisexuals, the transgendered, the questioning, the curious, the creatively concerned, and others, or why Jimmy has no friends. She's about to prove that she is the most accepting, tolerant, and loving mother of all time, bar none. Well, her 22-year-old daughter, Leslie, she says, what was I thinking, has announced that she is a lesbian, to which Helene replies, look at yourself. You're a professional tennis player. You have two cats named Alice and Mrs. Dalloway. You live with a female social worker, and you have the same haircut as the 12-year-old Amish boy. Helen Keller would know you're a lesbian from the stubble. Well, this continues as she reveals that her middle son, Ronnie, a 6-foot man with a beer gut, wants to be a female, and that her younger son, David, is not only gay, but the president of the International Order of Gay Leathermen and into scatology. So that's just the first one there. Mr. Charles, currently of Palm Beach, that part focuses on an overflamboyant cable show host of a show that he calls Too Gay. Yeah. Mr. Charles, who's played by Peter Bartlett, has a young ward named Shane, who's played by Mike Doyle, who keeps coming onto the show in different get-ups, including his birthday suit. The play Crafty finds us in the life of Barbara Ellen, played by Jane Houdyshell, surrounded by various homemade crafts, speaking to the Junior Chamber of Commerce in Decatur about the critical importance of crafts in our culture. She says that after the 9/11 event, she thought that Muslim terrorists or people using cheap cotton. And then lastly, The New Century, the fourth play, has all of the characters meeting at the maternity ward of a Manhattan hospital. While Helene is there to see the baby that her daughter and partner gave birth to, Barbara Ellen is present due to being sideswiped by a taxi, and Charles is hoping to zap the newborns to see if they'll all turn gay. Well, Really, you got, if you can, if you're coming to New York, you got to see the show. The script's one line is would make both Jay Leno and David Letterman absolutely jealous. So again, but probably next week maybe I'll read some of the script. I happen to have it here, and I'll read the parts of the scripts to you. In the meantime, so let me tell you also what's coming up. Tuesday, I'm going to the new Sports Museum of America. It's actually opening up on Wednesday the 7th, and I'm going there on Tuesday for the journalists are going to be there, and I'm going to get to hopefully interview, and I'm kind of interested to see the women that are there. We all know with all the men that are into sports, but I want to see the women that are there. I know Martina is supposed to be there, and of course Billie Jean King, because Billie Jean King, they have a whole section. Billie Jean King, I guess it's going to be the Billie Jean King Women's Hall of Fame, I believe that'll be there. But what I'm going to get back to you guys on, and I will do a show from there at some point, is I'm curious to see, like, for instance, the area that has basketball, whether they have the WNBA in that area or they've, you know, like you just have to go to that women's area to see only just to see the women. I want to see if they do it that way. This is, by the way, at downtown, I think it's on Broad Street and like way downtown where the ferry is in Manhattan. You can look up, it's called Sports Museum of America, and you can just, you know, Google that, and you can see kind of, you know, what's going on there, what's going to open up. It looks like it's going to be some biggie, that's for sure. I'm kind of looking forward to going to that, and I'm looking forward to all the games. Yes, and by the way, yes, the Sharks, the games are on right now. The Sharks took their first two games, I think it was 46-6 or something like that. I was there. And then I had to sing the Star Spangled Banner. Oh, my God. And then they took the second game. I didn't get to see that one. They took that one 40-0. This Saturday they're going to be in Baltimore to play the team that they beat the first game, which is the first game. Yes, that's who they won against. And so, but I'm not a schlep into Baltimore. Nah, but I'll hear it. We're on Blog Talk Radio as well. We have the game going on. So if you want to tune in and listen to the game, play by play, by all means. So, it's time to end the show. But keep those cards and letters coming in. I didn't get a chance to talk about Igor Kromany again. I'm still trying to get some information about it. Because of the jokes are coming in, and you know, we don't want to say anything that's that anybody will be upset or that everybody will be upset about. I think they're, did I say that they're all born bisexual? That's another thing, yes. Yeah, so that, so I guess we can find out what people are joking about on that as well. So I'm going to leave you now. And by the way, I think next week I'll have a show. The week after I won't be having a show because I'll be in Naples, Italy. Where's Mallory? I didn't tell you where Mallory is. Okay, but so I'm gonna leave you right now. I want everybody to have a good day, evening, or you know, whatever you have. Yeah. Say hello to everyone. Say goodbye to everyone. I know you're the host of the show. I understand. I got it.
Blog Talk Radio.